It's the Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. We're back out live at Titans training camp. Paul Koharski will join us shortly for another training camp report. With Chad Withrow, I'm Jonathan Hutton. And it is time to take a deep dive with what we've observed so far with this Titans training camp start. We'll also go league-wide with Greg Cosell of NFL Films. He's presented each and every week by the Huffaker Group of Keller Williams Realty. Make the right move by choosing Huffaker. Visit them online at THGTN.com or call 833-THG-NASH. Greg, it is great to have you back on the show, and it's great to have football back in front of us right now.
I know, it's crazy. I actually went to Eagles training camp on Sunday. It was a beautiful day, and it was good to see some football.
Yes, and it has been good to see the play of this secondary here in Nashville. That's the headline, and that's where we'll start today with you. The secondary so far has lived up to expectation. We'll get into the wide receiver aspect of that in a moment, but first and foremost, Malcolm Butler. If we were making a list of players that have stood out to us to begin the first week of camp, we would start with Malcolm Butler. He's been that good. He set the tone in practice with a big play here or there every day. I don't know if that would surprise you or not, but he has been very steady and consistent. Going back to when they signed him, Greg, what did you think about how he would fit in with this Titans defense?
Well, you know, I've always thought he was a very good corner. And again, none of us really know what happened in the Super Bowl, and that's old news at this point. But I thought he was a very good corner. He's obviously not big. You've been around him. So, he's not a 6'2 or 6'3 corner. But in New England, where he played a lot of press man, he also played a lot of zone. He has extensive experience playing multiple coverage concepts. He's played outside. He's played in the slot. So he has tremendous versatility. So I liked him as a player. I thought it was a great move. And, you talk about the secondary. You can look at this group now, and let's look at it from the perspective of their nickel, because teams are in their nickel more than 50% of the snaps, some teams more than 60 or 70% of snaps. I mean, their corners will be Butler, Adoree Jackson, and Logan Ryan. That's a really good trio of corners, and for the most part, they're interchangeable, Jonathan. I mean, Ryan can play in the slot, Jackson can play in the slot, Butler can play in the slot. They can be opponent-specific depending on the week and the matchup. And then you look at the safety position. Byard's turned out now, after 2 years, you'd have to say he's one of the top five safeties in the league with his multiple skill set, or I would certainly say that. And I assume it'll still be Cyprian, who's very good at what he does. He's a specific kind of player, but he's very good at what he does.
Yeah, it will. So far, it has been Cyprian, although we have seen players rotate in. But Cyprian, though, Greg, well, sticking on the theme of the secondary, how do you think offenses will try to attack Cyprian, given the fact that he's the weakest pass defender in base and nickel?
Yeah, but I think with Mike Vrabel there, I think you'll see Cyprian essentially sort of in the Patrick Chung role, and Patrick Chung's been a very good player in New England, where that particular position, that player is closer to the line of scrimmage, where Cyprian is at his best. Now, he will have to match up clearly at times to quality tight ends. That's what that position has to do. And Cyprian will have to accept that challenge, and he'll have to do that, because otherwise it'll be a little bit of a problem. Now, again, then it comes down to how much man-to-man Mike Vrabel and the defense wants to play, but they'll play a significant amount of man, in my opinion, anyway.
Just a quick note, we discussed this earlier this week, but the last time that Andrew Luck played the Titans, the top four cornerbacks, Greg, were Jason McCourty, Parrish Cox, Antoine Blake, and Bryce McCain. And if you compare that group to now, Butler, Jackson, Ryan, and LaShawn Sims,
right,
that is a completely different group. It's been a complete overhaul by John.
Well, they don't get Andrew Luck until mid-November, so just for the sake of the league and the enjoyment of watching a really good player, I hope he's playing in that game. Yeah. But they don't get him till mid-November.
Greg Cosell with us on the Midday 180.
Sticking with that Titans defense, Greg, Brian Arakpo said that ideally he would play 20 to 25 snaps a game, and he'd be okay with that because that means they'd be flexible enough where he could conserve some energy and really get after the quarterback. When you look at Brian Arakpo in this defense, is that the ideal spot for him if the Titans could pull it off?
I guess that would depend on a couple of things, Chad. It would depend on the development of Harold Landry. And you guys are there every day. I'm not, so I don't know what's going on. You can tell me better. But Harold Landry clearly has come into this league as a pass rusher. That's his greatest strength. So if he can get meaningful snaps, I don't know. You know, I don't think he'll play in the base. So, you know, Arakpo, I would think he'd play in the base. And now the question is he going to play in your nickel as he's getting older? Or is someone like Landry going to take his spot in the nickel? That to me, I guess, would be an open-ended question. The other issue, and I guess he's been injured. Has Rashawn Evans been injured?
He has been, and so has Arakpo. Arakpo banged shoulders early in camp. So
right.
We've
but
seen
Arakpo,
Landry get more reps because of that.
Arakpo has a track record. Everybody knows what he is.
That's right.
Evans is the interesting guy here because, as we've discussed before, he actually went to Alabama as a pass rusher, and he was used as a pass rusher at Alabama numerous times, lining up as an edge player, not rushing from a stacked linebacker position. He did that as well, but he was used as an edge pass rusher in a number of their sub-package fronts. So the question is, to the Titans, if he can get on the field, obviously, because rookies, you know, need reps no matter where they're drafted. But did they see Evans, once he gets reps and some experience, as an edge player in their sub fronts? If they do, then someone is not going to be getting reps in the sub front. So I guess we'll find out. But I mean, I think Arakpo, to me, is probably going to play in their base defense, in their, you know, in their 3-4 base.
Greg Cosell is with us from NFL Films. Greg, I've been unable to watch this team during OTAs and minicamps because they practice during our show. But I've heard a lot about the wide receiver splits, and I was told you will notice that immediately from this offense compared to the Robiski offense. And I did, from practice number one. Wide receiver splits for the Matt LaFleur offense are exactly what you would imagine coming from L.A., working with Shanahan and doing different things throughout his career. Tell me about minus splits. What do you mean by minus splits when you told me earlier this week you expect there to be a lot of minus splits for Matt LaFleur's offense when it comes to the wide receiving core?
Yeah, the terminology tends to be this. Well, plus splits means the wide receivers are split out wide, sort of what people view as normal. Minus splits, they're closer to the formation, and then nasty splits is a term that's used when they're really tight to the formation, almost like almost just flexed a few yards away from the tackle or a tight end. So, but Sean McVay, where Matt LaFleur came from last year, was a master at using minus splits with the wide receivers closer to the formation. And they help in a number of ways, guys. Number one, they help in the run game because they put receivers in position to be able to block what's often called the MDM, the most dangerous man. It's normally a safety who's coming down to fill. So you have a player to block the most dangerous man, that filling safety. But in the pass game, they help in a number of ways. What they do first and foremost is they create sort of bunch concepts or stack concepts, and that can create a lot of traffic problems for secondary players. Number one, it's very difficult to press when you have players, receivers tight to the formation because they're so close together. They're bunched. It's very difficult to press. Secondly, you get corners that have to kind of work through the routes because the receivers are so close together. And it also creates opportunities for motion across the formation, which helps to give the quarterback an indicator. And you're always looking for an indicator in terms of what the defense is doing before the snap of the ball. So, and the final point is, it also gives receivers now, they have a lot of room to work because they can work both ways. They can go outside or inside, and there's still a lot of room.
Well, I have noticed a ton of motion. You're exactly right. I've noticed a lot of screens.
Yep.
And Deion Lewis heavily involved in that. They're also working in Henry in the screen game quite a bit.
Yeah, well, he's caught screens before. I mean, he's caught touchdowns in Tennessee on screens. But it's funny you mentioned the screen game because the other thing that does as well, if you want to do the screen game from minus splits, you also have your offensive linemen who are then closer to the receiver catching the ball, and they don't have to run as long a distance to locate and strike. And obviously, it's much more difficult for an offensive lineman to locate and strike a quicker defender like a corner or a safety when he has to run 15 or 20 yards to try to do that.
I was discussing this aspect as we move on in our discussion with Greg Cosell to Marcus Mariota and observations within the offense with the franchise quarterback. Paul and I were discussing a practice over the weekend, Greg, about the easy throws within this offense for Mariota. We think of short throws as easy throws. What short throws are actually harder for quarterbacks? Are there some?
Well, I mean, any throw theoretically that you're throwing right in the middle, you know, between the numbers, so to speak, can be a tougher throw because the quarterback has to get away from the offensive line and from therefore the defensive line. And I remember Bill Walsh, when I had a chance to spend time with him years and years ago, telling me the nuance of teaching the quick game, the three-step drop pass game, and that the nuance is if you're going to throw the ball in the middle of the field, you've got to take big steps before you hit your third plan step because you've got to get away from the bodies. Otherwise, those throws can be knocked down. If you're going to throw the quick game, but you're throwing the ball outside the numbers, you can take smaller steps because there's nobody in front of you. But little things like that can be the difference between completions and balls knocked down. So are those throws easy? They're easy if you're out there in shorts and a t-shirt, yes. But once you're in a game, you have to be able to execute those nuanced elements of playing quarterback to make sure those theoretically simple throws turn into completions.
Yeah, and that's where I think the wider base that he's tried to work on this offseason can really show up, is with the quote-unquote layups within this offense. He needs to be able to make those layup throws.
The key to really any offense, I mean, look, everybody wants big plays. We know that. But the key is to be able to make the routine throws and always make the routine throws. And you know, you're looking for perfection on those. Obviously, you never get it, but that's what you're looking for. You know, there are certain throws that quarterbacks just should not miss. And those are the throws that you have to make sure you execute absolutely properly.
Vrabel brought this up recently, anticipation throws for quarterbacks versus quick release for a quarterback. Vrabel said he's mistaken one for the other in the past. How do you assess that at times when you evaluate the film? How can anticipation offset not having a quick release as a QB at times?
Well, I'm not exactly sure what he means, but certain throws, if you're talking about the quick game, let's say,
yes.
Usually the quick game is a defined one-read throw. So you're not reading anything. It's not a progression read because the ball has to come out basically on your third step in 1.5 seconds. So it's not, there's no progression read. Anticipation throws to me are usually deeper drops, not seven step. Not a lot of people do seven step drops now, but where you have to drop back and you sort of have to, you know, decipher what you're seeing. Ideally, you know that, but they're normally made against zone coverage where you have windows and you throw the ball into a window that your receiver's breaking into. Those are the throws I think of as anticipation throws, timing and anticipation throws. I don't know if that's exactly what Mike Vrabel means, but those, the quicker release, the longer you can wait. If your release is a little slower, then you know you've got to throw it sooner. Because if you wait too long, you're just throwing your receiver right then into the coverage. You've got to throw him into the void.
Greg, before we go around the league a bit with training camp news and headlines, Kendrick Lewis,
yep.
A veteran safety who the Titans signed this offseason back in March. 6 feet tall, 205 pounds. He entered the league back in 2010 out of Ole Miss as a fifth-round pick and played with the Chiefs, I think was a teammate of Vrabel's in Kansas City, then played in Vrabel's defense last season in Houston. He's been getting I look up from time to time, and I see Lewis in the secondary, either with Byard or with a different combination that they may use on certain down and distances. What could Lewis bring to this defense at times when needed?
Well, you know, Lewis was a starting player in this league, and people have forgotten about him simply because he basically missed all of last season. But he was a starting safety in Kansas City. He then played in Houston. He then played in Baltimore. And so it'll be interesting because I think I see him more as a deep safety type player. Has he been playing for Cyprian, or where have they been lining him up?
Well, he's been playing deep safety, as you bring that up. I mean, he's well off the football, and he's usually the deep guy in passing situations.
That's the way, that's what he's played in his career. He's been much more of a free safety. But this is a fascinating point you're bringing up, because Byard has a multi-dimensional skill set, and if Cyprian were to have problems in coverage, Byard could end up being the guy who essentially is the quote-unquote strong safety in certain packages to match up to the tight end, and Lewis could be the free safety, the single high safety, because that's what he's done in his career. He's only 30 years old.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I don't know if he sat out last year due to injury or what the situation was, but he was he started a lot of games in this league.
Yeah, well, he started 81 games.
Yeah.
And he's appeared in 90 for his career. 9 interceptions, 2 return for a touchdown, and well over 200 tackles for his career. So it's not like he's some guy who just plays special teams. And I think whenever they signed him, that was the assumption. You see a guy that signed in that mold, you're thinking a 30-year-old who's been a journeyman because he's a good teams player, and he's more than that when you look at his body of work.
Well, my guess is it was an injury situation, because his last season, 2016, he left, because I remember he got hurt early and I think he was done, but he's been a full-time starter. My guess is he started all 16 games 3 or 4 times in his career.
And I said he played for Houston last year. I was wrong. He played for Houston back in 2014 when
right.
Vrabel was just the linebackers coach at that
right,
point.
Right, right. But he obviously knows him. And if memory serves me correctly, he was the full-time starter at free safety. I think he started the whole season in Houston in 2014. So he's been a full-time starter in the league. And if he has anything left, he could clearly get snaps. You know, they may even put him in free safety in their sub, feeling that they're better with Byard in that strong safety role, which we saw Byard play last year at times and do it well, and Lewis could end up being the free.
Greg Cosell with us. Follow him on Twitter at Greg Cosell.
So, Greg, the Vikings agree to a 5-year extension with Stephon Diggs, worth $81 million, $40 million guaranteed. Clearly, they like what he brings to that offense. When you watch that Vikings offense, what do you see with Stephon Diggs?
Well, I think Diggs is a really good route runner. I think he's a really good short to intermediate receiver with some deceptive verticality. Not one of those guys that's going to run by people, but I think that he can do that depending on the coverage and his understanding of how to run routes and set up corners. I think with Diggs and Adam Thielen, who is probably even more explosive than Diggs as a vertical guy, they have two terrific receivers for Kirk Cousins, because I think Kirk Cousins is at his best throwing the ball short, intermediate, the timing, rhythm-style pass game, and I think those two receivers really help that kind of quarterback. They've got a lot of good players signed through at least, I think, 2020, 2021, so they've got a pretty good core.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about the best committee of running backs in the league. A lot of people talking about the Titans right now with Derrick Henry and Deion Lewis. I want to ask you about another team in the AFC South, though, Jacksonville, and what they bring to the table with Leonard Fournette, with T.J. Yeldon. Fournette had a good rookie season. Yards per carry wasn't great, though, a year ago. What do you think about the stable of running backs Jacksonville brings to the table?
I think it's strong, and I read where Fournette lost some weight, and I think that's really good. And I think Fournette, as much, and I liked him a lot, as you guys know, coming out, and he certainly did what he needed to do for them last year because their offense ran through him. But I think losing some weight, understanding how to run in the NFL, that not every run can be a power run, that at some point you can't just, you know, run into people. I think he'll learn that. I think he'll be a better player this year. I think Yeldon's a good backup. And they still have Corey Grant, who's got a lot of juice. And I think that, that's a really good trio for them to work with, because I think they're going to essentially play the same way. I think they know what Blake Bortles is. I think they're going to essentially play the same way and play to their defense, which is really, really good.
Greg Cosell with us. Greg, two players that are making some headlines. I'll start with the big-name player first, and that's in Kansas City with Pat Mahomes at quarterback. What do you like about him paired with Andy Reid? And what are when you heard they were making this transition to Mahomes full-time, what were your initial thoughts versus maybe what you're reading and hearing coming out of KC now?
Well, Mahomes is a super talent talented kid throwing the football. Not a lot of guys can throw it like Pat Mahomes.
I saw a highlight of him, no effort at all.
No.
And threw a 55-yard pass without much. It just looks so easy, just a flick of the wrist.
Yeah, he's pretty darn good at that.
Yeah.
You know, Andy Reid's offense is very well schemed, and I think one of the really the real interesting things about Andy's offense is it's defined. Now, there are sometimes he calls plays and you don't get the right defense, and he can't quite and the throw's not there. And that's sometimes one reason why Alex Smith would get stuck and he'd have to leave the pocket. But the point is, it's very defined. You know where you're throwing the football. And I think that Mahomes, that will help him quite a bit. And now they have a ton of speed. I mean, we know about Tyreek Hill. Sammy Watkins can still really run. This offense has big play ability, and Mahomes can make those throws down the field. And they'll be aggressive, and they still have a very good run game with Kareem Hunt. So they have a lot of weapons. They have a ton of dimensions. I'll be interested to see what Mahomes does in terms of, let's say, completion percentage. My guess is it won't be great, but there'll be big plays.
Greg, it's tough for rookies at wide receivers, tough for rookies, period, but tough for rookies at wide receiver to come in and immediately grasp the NFL game. It takes some time. But we have seen Clemson wide receivers come in and adapt quickly. Deion Kane, a rookie out of Clemson, now with the Indianapolis Colts. There is a buzz in Indy with their training camp and the job he's done so far. Now, when I look at their depth chart, there's T.Y. Hilton, there's Ryan Grant, Chester Rogers is there. So I guess my overall point at wide receiver for them is when Andrew Luck's throwing you the football, you better catch it. And if you catch it, you're going to look pretty good. Deion Kane as a sixth-round pick, what did you think he brought to the table for what Indy's offense should be?
Well, first of all, I thought that Deion Kane was better than a sixth-round pick. And I, you know, again, I certainly don't know the whole situation and, you know, how that stuff works. I mean, I can't speak to that, you know, why he went in the sixth round. But Deion Kane, to me, was better than that as a talent. And, in fact, when I studied him, I looked at his 2017 tape, but I also went back and looked at some tape from 2016 when I thought he was better. And to me, that was a better barometer. He caught the ball more in the middle of the field. He's really smooth. He's fluid. He's big. If he were to reach his potential, I'm not saying he's a big-time number one, but I think you could line him up both outside and in the slot, and with his size and movement ability and athleticism, I think he could be a pretty high-quality wideout in this league.
Greg, I was reading Peter King's column on Monday morning, and he wrote about something that you mentioned to us late in the year last year with Cam Newton. And Peter King wrote that the strategy against the Panthers for years for opposing defensive coordinators has been to send blitzes at Newton. But I remember you pointing out last year that teams decided not to blitz him as much in 2017 for whatever reason. We'll get to that in a moment. But he faced an extra pass rusher, according to King, on 29% of plays, seventh in the league, but much lower than what it had been previously the past 2 years. Because in 2015, that number was at 39%. Last year, it was at, or 2016, excuse me, 38% of the time. Last year, 29% of the time. Why do you think defensive coordinators decided to bring the extra man less against that Panthers offense last year?
Well, that's a great question. You know, Cam is still not consistent, and this is the thing. He's very freakish, and it's easy just to say that and then move on as if, wow, now he's a great quarterback, and we've established that. He's a different kind of quarterback because of his freakish size and his ability to make certain kinds of plays that others can't. But the thing about Cam is he's still not consistent on a week-to-week basis as a passer. And there's different ways to deal with that. Some teams will believe in attacking him with pressure. Now, when you blitz, you're not just attacking the quarterback. Keep that in mind. So, but if you attack with pressure, what you're doing is you're often forcing the quarterback to speed up. Now, there are some defensive coaches, even though Cam can run and run well, that believe if you can make the offense play outside of structure and a little frenetic, that the advantage goes to you as a defense because they're not playing the way they're coached to play. Now, you can get burned once in a while, but you can also back off and make Cam have to quote-unquote play quarterback and then make precise throws with more consistency. And he still, on occasion, does not do that really well. And one thing I read, and it's interesting because I felt this way watching him on tape, is that Norv Turner, their new coordinator, has talked a lot about him so-called taking what the defense gives you. Checking it down, throwing the short ball, not waiting and waiting and waiting and trying to make the great throw. And I think that's something he needs to do to become a more consistent and more sustaining player.
Greg, Johnny Manziel is going to make his CFL debut.
Yeah, I saw that.
for Montreal on Friday. I've never asked you about watching the CFL film. Are you interested in watching Manziel?
Probably not. I mean, I don't think I'll take a look at that. My guess is he's a long way from the NFL, if he ever gets to the NFL. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, normally when guys are out of the NFL at that position for as long as he's been, it's hard to come back.
Have you seen highlights, speaking of highlights, of Josh Allen trying to complete short passes in Buffalo?
Yeah, and it's been a struggle, which I thought it would be. Remember, we talked about the fact that he speaks to the difference between arm strength and arm talent. And arm talent is the pace, the touch, and that those are the throws that he struggles with.
Greg, I expect a full report next week on Johnny Manziel, by the way, and his CFL performance.
I hope you are.
I'll be watching.
You were just saying that for whoever wants to give you the full report, because it won't be me.
How about this? I will watch the film of Johnny Manziel, and I'll do a really bad job of doing an impression of you talking about Johnny Manziel's game after reviewing the film. How about that?
Well, yeah, you know about the Canadian League. The field's wider. You only get three downs. It's a whole different game.
Greg, one final thing on the Titans, which will be a bigger topic for us as we move forward this week and next week. And that is the Titans wide receiving core. We have wondered if we should have discussed more about what the Titans did or did not do, rather, at the wide receiver position this past offseason. They are truly riding with what they have. And as we watch them against this Titans secondary, it's been the secondary that has grabbed the headlines, not the wide receivers. But I wonder your thoughts on what San Francisco did last year once Jimmy Garoppolo got rolling with their wide receiver depth chart, and how that worked out with the receiver names that I'm sure the majority of our offense could not name at this point.
Well, keep one thing in mind, too, guys. They addressed wide receiver in the draft last year, yet you can't address the same positions every year. They drafted Corey Davis with the fifth pick in the draft. They drafted Taywan Taylor in the third round. So they addressed the wide receiver position. These are talented guys, particularly Corey Davis. So a new coaching staff comes in now with new schemes that, by the way, help wide receivers, and they're looking at the talent, and they feel that these guys will be able to play. They're talented guys. So, you know, I think they feel good about the talent level. Now, obviously, the production has to happen, but on paper anyway, the offense is going to help the production improve.
One final note, you mentioned Taywan Taylor, and it reminded me of this. Paul, and this may have changed over the last couple of practices, but Paul talked with Taywan Taylor on Sunday, and Taywan told him that he has worked 100% of the time as an outside receiver. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think in this offense it almost doesn't matter because Robert Woods, who a lot of people might think was a slot receiver, was an outside receiver for the Rams last year and had his best year. And I think Taywan Taylor might even be a little more explosive than Robert Woods, but he could fill the Robert Woods role in this offense, and I think he could be very good in that role.
I guess that would mean when Matthews gets back, Matthews is the slot guy?
Possibly. You know, again, who else is...
Well, I mean, if you keep in mind, Corey Davis worked more out of the slot in college than Taywan Taylor did at Western Kentucky.
Right. But Corey Davis, where is Corey Davis lining up in this offense? Is he lining up?
He's the outside guy too. Yes.
Yeah. So that doesn't surprise me at all. Quick question. I know we're running out of time, but has Deontay Burnett gotten any reps?
You know, he did not make a splash at all during OTAs or minicamps, and that's just me being quite honest with you.
Okay.
So when I see him make a play, I have jotted it down throughout the first week or so. He's made some nice plays with the third team, but and again, he wasn't making those plays. He didn't stand out as much during the early portion of the offseason. He's beginning to come along now within this offense,
because
though.
To me, he's a true slot. I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's going to be Cooper Kupp with the Rams, but he was a slot at USC, and I liked him coming out. I thought he was a draftable player. I know he had some off-the-field stuff. He didn't work out. He didn't go to the combine. He didn't do a pro day. So I'm sure that soured a lot of teams, and that's why he was undrafted. But he has slot receiver skills.
The two wide receivers who I think have really stepped up, Jordan Veazey, he's a taller guy, built more like Corey Davis,
right,
as the undrafted, and certainly not new to the NFL, but Darius Jennings, who was a part of this team a bit last year, he's had some really nice grabs within this offense, too, using his speed.
Well, you know, I think other than Matthews, who I guess is hurt now, beyond Davis and Taylor, it would seem to me that the receiver position is pretty wide open.
It is. And you know what? We didn't even talk about Tajay Sharp,
right,
who also factors into the mix here. And we'll certainly do that as the weeks progress. Greg, thanks so much for taking the time today. We appreciate it. We always enjoy your breakdowns.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks a lot.